Good morning. This is Stuart Bunnell from the Shone FM Newsroom, and this is the latest interview in our 2025 territorial election series, where we'll be speaking with party leaders and Indigenous candidates from each of the three parties. Today, we're speaking with Linda Moen, a Kwanlin-Dunn First Nation councillor and Yukon NDP candidate for Mountain View. In her work as a councillor with KDFN, she has helped create more jobs for young people, make the community safer for families, and build dozens of housing units. And she joins me today live in studio. Linda, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you for the invite. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you. Now, what drove you to run as a candidate for the Yukon NDP?
Well, I'm a sitting councillor for Kwanlin-Dunn First Nation right now. I'm currently on leave, and I've known Kate since about 2019 and seen her at various community events. She was always very approachable, always saying hi and catching up. And when this territorial election was called, I had seen her again, and we sat down and started having conversations, and it just seemed like a right fit for things that I valued and very liked minds, and it just led for her to asking me to see if I wanted to put my name in Mountain View and go through the process of being nominated as a candidate, and it just seemed like a really great fit, and I've been really happy to be asked, actually.
Yeah. And how does running for an MLA differ from running for KDFN council? What are the differences? What are the similarities? How do the experiences compare?
First and foremost, you're listening to your citizenship. So we're listening to our people and really taking direction from them. And I don't think that would difference from listening to Yukoners and priorities, things that are important to them, and how we can make a difference in their everyday lives, in the communities. And you know, people want safer communities. They want well-paying jobs. They want access to health care. And I don't think that differs from what any other Yukoner would want.
Good. So you're feeling confident going into this. It's not a new experience for you. That's got to be helpful.
Yes, it is. Very much so.
Yeah. Now, of course, as you and the rest of our listeners know, housing and affordability, those are two really big aspects of this election. And as I mentioned in your intro, you've helped build dozens of new housing units for Kwanlin-Dunn First Nation. What effect has that had for KDFN citizens, and what effect will it have on Yukoners to have more homes built?
Well, again, we listened to our citizens that had identified that, you know, as our population increases, people that want to move back into the communities with their young families, citizens that are aging out from family units into elders. So we're looking at to ensure that everybody has a quality home. Affordability is a big issue for us as well. Many of our elders live on pensions, so we're trying to be very innovative when it comes to our housing stock and how that looks. So listening to our people again, identifying their needs. For Yukoners, it'd be the same thing. Affordability, I think, entering a housing market for first-time home buyers, I think, is very important. Right now, NDP has promoted some really great 100 homes that they're hoping to build when we form government. So I think it's really important that we're looking at and listening to Yukoners and just really trying to make a good, solid plan that's achievable.
Yeah, and you know, as important as it is to have housing, those 100 homes for new for first time home buyers, those 100 units for the Yukon Housing Corporation, those super duper important, but they're not the only way to adjust affordability and address that problem in the territory. So, what other ways can the next territorial government address affordability?
One of them is with the electrical rate increase. So I know that Kate and the NDP has said that they would not support the next hike in electrical rates. And I think that's really important. I was looking at information that in the last 10 years that has increased 80%. And I can't imagine what other sector would be allowed to increase 80%. when it's hitting Yukoners' bottom lines. As a single income earner for my home, that is something that I would have to look at, of what I may have to give up to afford to continue paying rate increases.
Yeah, and it's and the thing with electricity is that it's not exactly a luxury. It's something that folks need. It's not an extra streaming subscription or anything. It's something that you need. And yeah, 80% is way out of line with inflation. Inflation's bad, but it's not that bad. Now, public safety, that's also huge, and there are a lot of aspects to it, as you know, from working with women's organizations and the RCMP to make the territory safer. So what changes to public safety will make communities safer across the territory?
So one initiative that I did in 2014 was with the Women's Coalition Group is that we established a protocol together for safety with the RCMP, and that was to keep women and young girls safe in Whitehorse. And I'm very happy to say that that protocol is still in place as of today. It just recently had updated language to be more inclusive. So when I look at grassroots organizations, NGOs, where their mandates align with these very issues, it's creating partnerships and relationships that we have already seen work. You know, this is going back to 2014 and it's still here, 2025. Those types of relationships and those types of work that we have the ability to do and create new partnerships, I think that's where you're going to see a lot of great movement coming in, working with them, identifying what their mandates are and how we can support one another. I think public safety is very broad and it's going to look different for even in the rural communities. What works here in Whitehorse may necessarily not work in the other rural communities, and it's also listening to them, what their needs are, and then coming up with plans that help the communities really have not just feel safe, but it looks safe as well when you go into the community. So I think you have to work with the First Nations at the level there as well, and with the other communities, the villages, like the village of Teslin. I think there's many layers that come to public safety that would have to be included in those plans and initiatives.
Absolutely. And of course, as difficult as it is, we got to talk a little bit about the opioid crisis. What is it that we need to be doing more of or doing better of to help address the opioid crisis here in Whitehorse and, of course, across the territory?
Well, I think one of the things that resonated with me was that having access to a doctor. If you're an addiction or an active lifestyle like that, I think there's probably many factors that may be affected, including your mental health, your physical health, and just having access to doctors can have you the ability to start addressing those very two needs, which I think is hugely important. When you're physically healthy, I think that leads to your mental health, well-being, your spiritual well-being. And I think those go hand in hand. And the other part of that is I know that there's a lot of issues with the shelter right now. And I think we're one of the only parties that have supported a low barrier access and meeting people where they're at. And I think that's important as well. I think us, the days of telling people this is what you need to do and trying to fit them into a box no longer works. I think that it's multi-layered. I think there's many aspects to it, and I don't think one approach is going to help many people that are into this lifestyle, to the families that are affected by it, to the communities. Again, it's very multi-layered. It's not a, you know, there's so many people involved, First Nations, citizens, you know, the downtown core. There's just so many people involved in it, and you have to have the person at the center of it to really begin to address what their unique needs are. And I think that's what I appreciate about the NDP and how we're going to look at it, is that these are individuals. These are their lives. They come from families that love them, that care about them, that are worried about them. And if we can do a one-step approach of offering them having a doctor, I think that's the beginning of a healing path for them, is that their physical and their mental well-being will be addressed.
Brilliant. We're running out of time here, so I've got one more question for you. What can First Nations and Indigenous voters expect from you should you make it to the Yukon Legislative Assembly?
I think, you know, just being present and visible in the community for the work that I have done for all these years. You know, I'm a public servant for the last 21 years. I think it's all kind of led up to this point. I'm just hoping to show people that, you know, these are achievable, that there's spaces made for you, created for you. People see the work that we're doing and want you to be a part of their teams. I think it's when Kate had asked me, I was like, wow, I was really honored by that, that she's seen the work that I have done and the value that I'd bring to her and her team. And it was just, like I said, a really great fit. And I hope that others see that in not just me being Indigenous, but for anybody that comes from our communities, that there's room at the table and, you know, we add value to these spaces.
Wonderful. I'm afraid we are out of time today. Linda Moen, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you so much.